underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. In his new book, Fantasyland, How America Went Haywire, a 500-year history, New York Times bestselling author and co-creator of the Peabody Award-winning public radio show Studio 360, Kurt Anderson provides a new and comprehensive understanding of our post-truth world and the American instinct in make-believe. Kurt Anderson's novels include Heyday, Turn of the Century, and True Believers. He contributes to Vanity Fair and the New York Times. He co-founded Spy Magazine, served as editor-in-chief of New York. Before a live audience at a New York State Writers Institute event on the campus of the University at Albany in Albany, New York, it is a pleasure to welcome Kurt Anderson to this week's book show. A great pleasure.
My complete pleasure.
As we live right now, we are mired deep in fantasy land. You've been thinking about that concept for a lot longer than perhaps we have.
I have. I mean, it's one of those examples of a project that has really been fermenting and simmering for a long time. I didn't really begin thinking of it as a book until around 2010, started writing it 2013, 2014.
The idea being what? The original germ.
There were several germs. I have been curious for a long time about, as many scholars are curious, why America and Americans are so much more religious and extravagantly religious than people in other countries in the developed world. That was part of that was one of the threads. I was interested as the child of a good, solid, conservative Republican family in Nebraska where I grew up. I was sort of astonished by what had become of the Republican Party in the last 20 years as it sort of, to my mind, went off the rails in a lot of ways. I have always been interested in the kind of American knack for creating fantastical, immersive reality, unreality, and our whether it's movies and TV and now games, and how that might bleed over into the rest of life. So there were several, there were a bunch of threads, and then at a certain point, I had, I guess, a kind of aha moment of, oh, maybe this all relates. Maybe this is all connected, and maybe there's a history to what I was beginning to imagine was a kind of defining tendency on the part of Americans to passionately believe the untrue.
So, what brought you to 500 years, that the history would go back that far?
Well, it didn't. I mean, as with all books, you have a kind of rough idea, a crude idea, a set of stick figures, and then you begin thinking about it and thinking through it, and in this case, because it's nonfiction, researching it, and it became a different book than it began to be. I at the beginning, I thought maybe it would be a history of the last 50 years or so, and then I realized as I thought and researched that the threads go further back, and the threads kept going further back, and I went to the very beginning, to the first European settlers, the first English people who came to the New World, and then I realized, as I was writing about them, I decided I believed that there was something inherent in the kind of extreme Protestantism of the Pilgrims and the Puritans that was key to my what I believed I was finding. And so I went back to, and that's, as it happens, exactly 500 years ago, Martin Luther started Protestantism. So it was a good round number.
The idea that as we created this nation and the United States of America comes together, I found that to be one of the most fascinating parts of the book, because we really start to see, as you say, the seeds starting to be very much sown in our social, cultural, political fabric at that point.
Yeah. No, and again, once I sort of had the template to look at these kind of working theories of the case, plus, by the way, our extraordinary free market where you could sell anything you wanted and it was buyer beware, which was part of this dynamic as well. And yeah, once I kind of created the paradigm or the idea and the template, I frankly just suddenly saw American history in a new light. And you know, not that any one of the things I talk about along in this history and these characters that I talk about are wholly new or original research. I think I found a way to connect a lot of disparate dots in a way that makes it a portrait of America that, as it happens, as I was finishing the book, people recognized as salient.
So how do you define Fantasyland?
It's a couple of things. It's indifference to factual truth or falsehood. It's craving of exciting untruths, whether they are movies or more consequential real world untruths. And I would say it's a kind of passionate belief in the factually untrue, despite the lack of any evidence for that belief. And so it's all of those things feeding so many different parts of American life, whether now politics, media, religion, show business itself, and all of those working in a sort of synergistic fashion over the years and over the centuries to get us where we are now, and that it was that all of those things have their good sides, and all of those things were kept in check for several hundred years when the grown-ups were in charge, and then over the last 50 years or so, the grown-ups were no longer in charge, and those tendencies, those American tendencies of most of them are a form of kind of hyper individualism. I know it's true because I feel it's true. I believe it's true, and therefore nothing you can tell me is going to convince me otherwise. Those things kind of metastasized out of control the last 50 years, and that gave us what I call Fantasyland.
So do we live in that land because we like it and we want to, or because it is a result of what we created?
That's a very good question. I would say it's mostly not a conscious choice. I would say we have created a set of circumstances, including, for instance, most recently, the digital world, which was the sort of final straw that made Fantasyland and all of its fiefdoms and parts have their own very convincing versions of reality that could be propagated. So we don't choose that, but once we're there, those of us who are inhabitants of Fantasyland, unlike all the people in this audience, once we're there, it becomes comfortable, because a lot of what I call Fantasyland is simply the confirmation of one's pre-existing feelings and opinions and beliefs, and deciding that they are equivalent to facts. And so yeah, that's comfortable, and once you are in that realm of alternative facts and whatever I think is true because I think it's true, yes, it's comfortable, but I think we got there only half consciously, if even maybe not even half consciously.
Is it intellectual laziness?
That's one way of putting it, I suppose. Oh, well, what's one way of putting it for some of it? I would say it's, if you're going to put a pejorative spin on it, and I do put a pejorative spin on it,
yeah.
Let's be honest, I would say it's uncritical thinking or a lack of rigor about thinking. So yeah, I've never thought of it exactly as intellectual laziness, because that sounds a little highfalutin, like I'm saying people should need to go to graduate school or something, and that's not what I'm saying. It's not simply a matter of poor education. It's because there are lots of educated people who are resident in Fantasyland. But that's a part of it, sure.
No, but asking a question is okay. You don't have to have the degree, but you can you can question, you can inquire.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, I mean, this nation was, in addition to being a nation started by extreme religionists in the form of the Pilgrims and the Puritans, was also started by the people of the Enlightenment, the Thomas Jeffersons and John Adams and Benjamin Franklin, who, and of course, what was the Enlightenment about? Question everything or anything. Find the truth on your own. And that's great until it isn't and kind of goes off the rails and people cease to use reason as opposed to sheer feeling to determine what they believe the truth to be.
Kurt Anderson is our guest. The name of the new book, Fantasyland, How America Went Haywire, A 500-Year History. Where are we on the level of haywire? It seems hard to believe that we can go much further.
Well, but that's what we wake up every day saying, isn't it? Couldn't believe we got here more haywire. It's interesting. And of course, this political moment, you know, one of its silver linings is that it became a great illustration for this book that I was writing. For instance, I think of a counterfactual version of things. Let's say Donald Trump had not been elected president.
Yeah, let's say that.
I believe this book would be just as true. It would not have its stark avatar in the White House. We would have felt like we'd missed a bullet, and we would have, in my view, missed a bullet as well. So I think it's gone pretty far. And to the degree I can summon up hope about when people say, well, how can we roll this back? How can we privilege reason and rationality again and make it like it used to be? Well, I'm not sure we can. I think we can stop it from getting worse. And I think that this may be, as you say, Joe, peak fantasy land. It will not get worse. That's the slim hope that I can offer.
But then you also wonder if it can get better. I mean, you wonder that once you have dealt with a fantasy land, if you want to go back to whatever reality is slash was. And it's, I don't know. I don't know if once you've reached that place, if you can go back.
I'm with you. I don't know either. And I have always been an optimist. And I'm a kind of standard American in that way. I really have been. But yeah, it may be a kind of black hole phenomenon where we get to the edge and there is no going back. I don't quite believe that. And I think there are, by my rough reckoning, and I spent many, many hours and days and weeks and months poring over survey research data to try to figure out, well, like, how many people am I talking about who are really over there in fantasy land versus those of us who like to believe ourselves to be in the reality-based community. And I would say sort of third of us, pretty solidly reality-based, third of us probably gone for good, and maybe a third of us who are redeemable. And so that's, to the degree this is a struggle, and I think it has to be a struggle to try to make it not go further and to say, no, we're not going to just let anybody spout any crazy opinion as if it's fact just because they're entitled to their opinion. You know, I think we are at a long crossroads, but talk to me in 30 years and I'll tell you if this was the beginning of the end or not. It may be.
The idea that, as you say, you go the 50 years where the grown-ups weren't in charge anymore. Okay, so two questions. One, who is in charge? And two, where the hell are the grown-ups?
Well, the grown-ups have different, to the degree the grown-ups stopped being in charge over the last 50 years, they had different motives. Look at the cable channels that are ostensibly nonfiction, that are running documentaries about mermaids and swamp monsters and all the rest. But so the people who profited from it, who don't really believe that mermaids exist or that a Sharknado is possible or whatever it is, they were driven by the normal cynical desire for money. So that's a certain kind of grown-up. Other parts of the establishment stopped being grown-ups or stopped being in charge because, well, suddenly being a gatekeeper by its nature, and having gates and having the ability to stigmatize that set of nutty beliefs for being nutty. That became impolite and uncool. And so they fell down on the job because, oh, no, the tides are running against us on that. Slowly but surely, for various reasons, people, the gatekeepers stopped keeping the gates. The grown-ups were no longer in charge. And that's a very hard thing to reinstate because you're going to look like that terrible, terrible thing in America, an elitist, if you start saying, no, these are the facts, and you may say that you believe in the literal biblical account of how the world and human beings were created, and that's fine, but we're not going to be teaching that in the public schools. That has become a contentious and fraught assertion, which, for instance, creationism is now Republican orthodoxy. That's a new thing, and people don't realize how radically and quickly that's changed. 2008, all the Republican candidates asked on one of those debate stages, who believes in evolution? Two-thirds, three-quarters of them, yeah, I believe in evolution. 4 years later, 2012, how many believe in evolution? Down to a third. 2016, okay, all of you 17 candidates, how many believe in evolution? One, Jeb Bush, who then walked that back. So that's how quickly it's happened. And people can have their wacky beliefs, the beliefs that I think are wacky, fine. But when it bleeds over into consequential matters like that, to me, and in that case, it's the smart people, the grown-ups in charge of the Republican Party, thought they were in charge until suddenly they weren't, and they followed their most fantastically inclined partisans down a pretty terrible rabbit hole.
So doesn't that mirror a fact that the people who voted in this last election, electorally speaking, voted for someone who mirrored that in the sense of they were going to solve everything. They were going to make everything better. They were going to walk on water. They were going to change the healthcare system. They were going to bring your jobs back. They were going to do everything.
Well, and that's the
and single-handedly.
And that's the strange and illuminating thing about Donald Trump as a representative of what I'm talking about here, because I think a lot of people who voted for him, I know a lot of people who voted for him, didn't really buy his shtick, didn't really think when he said, oh, healthcare is going to be for everybody and everybody's going to be able to afford it and it's going to be better. And I could go on and on. All of those fantastical promises. It's going to be winning. You're going to get tired of winning. All those things. Did people really believe that? Some of them did, and that's sad. But I think a lot of them, like Trump himself, were kind of indifferent to the truth or falsehood of things he promised. And that's, to me, the horrible thing, the scary thing.
All right, so let me hone in on that. Yeah. Indifferent how? I mean, do they want to believe it? If it happens, great. If it doesn't happen, it's somebody different, and we'll be okay.
Sure, people want to believe that everything will be beautiful and America will be great again, according to their interpretation of how it was once great.
We all had red hats.
Or white skin by the Trumpian paradigm of greatness. I think, but they also, and a big part of my argument in this book is this American desire for entertainments of all kinds so great that people are willing to disregard whether it's true or kind of false or totally false as long as it's entertaining. And that's what, in his brilliance, if I can use that word, Trump understands, is that desire to be entertained above all, that Americans have to be distracted by some new episode of entertaining entertainment. And so that's why he governs the way he does, which is not to govern at all, but to have a new Donald Trump show on every day, which makes the normal demand for, I want to know what's true. Is he lying? Does he believe this? It's kind of washed, has been able to be washed over so far because it remains so entertaining for all of us. I may not like what's going on, but my God, I can't take my eyes off it. It's riveting. It's entertaining.
Well, I'm having trouble with the term entertaining because I'm still thinking there's some enjoyment in that.
Well, for many of his supporters, there is enjoyment.
I know, but when you see what's going on and you wonder, oh, God, you know, you hear your phone beep at night and you're like, oh, I wonder if there'll be a sun in the morning.
Well, yes, indeed. And until the rubber hits the road in some fashion, like a big war where people, many, many millions of people lose their health care or so on, it will continue to be a circus that a lot of people are willing to take in as a circus. When the consequences are more terrible for people, and more palpably, undeniably terrible for people, that will cease to be so entertaining. And again, I use entertaining in a broad sense, I mean, which is to say distracting, riveting, something you want to watch, like a car wreck when you drive by it, you know?
Right.
It can be that, I mean, it would be unkind to call that entertainment, but that is included in my definition.
It demands our attention.
Yeah.
Because don't get me wrong, I mean, I could watch, that whole Ivana Melania thing, I could watch that forever. That's entertaining.
Yes.
I find that to be entertaining. I don't want to find it entertaining, but I find it very entertaining.
There you go. There you go. And what I found is that this, as Mark Twain may or may not have said, history does not repeat itself, but it rhymes. And those rhymes for Americans, just like, I don't care if it's true. What if P.T. Barnum is selling me this mermaid? If that mermaid's real, I'll buy the ticket to see his damn mermaid. So there, and that's happened again and again. It's happened in newspapers back in the 1800s. That there is this desire to be to marvel. Among other things, can incline people to disregard the truth or falsehood of things.
But do we have, like, nut jobs anymore? I mean, there was always the people, like, in our family that, you know, Uncle Ernie didn't believe that we really landed on the moon.
Right.
And that it was all done in a set somewhere in Cleveland.
It was Burbank.
It was Burbank. Yeah, oh, yeah. Fine. Yeah. Burbank.
Yeah.
And although I have to tell you that when my wife and I were recently at the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum and you see what actually landed on the moon, you do say to yourself, it kind of looks like it came out of Burbank.
Yeah.
Okay, but anyway, but that was something that was the outlier. That was,
right.
Oh, you know, let's invite him over and have him tell us that story because it's funny and we'll all laugh and giggle. And now it is our reality. We're talking about this every day.
Right. No, that's exactly right. And that is a large part of my argument is that what began in the 1960s and the 1970s was every nutcase and every crackpot has his or her right to that crackpot opinion. And the dismissal of them as crackpots and nut jobs became less and less acceptable. And then when we got the internet, that's the point at which it probably we were destined for this moment. Because as we all know, I mean, anybody who believes anything, whether it's that jet contrails are chemtrails poisoning us, or that our last president was born in a foreign country, or whatever the untrue, nutty, crackpot thing is, can make that seem real with a web page, with 1,000 web pages, with a talk radio program, with a cable news network. So once, but most especially the internet. Once we had this infrastructure for fantasy land. Which allowed your crazy Uncle Jack to recruit thousands of more crazy Uncle Jacks and realize that no, he wasn't just the oddball. There are we're a force to be reckoned with. We're a legion. This is true. And look, the internet shows me it is true. That's when the set of American predispositions was allowed to run amok.
The name of the book is Fantasyland, How America Went Haywire, a 500-year history, published by Random House. Kurt Anderson, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Special thanks to Paul Grondahl and the New York State Writers Institute. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.